In the Lee case, great opinion by Judge Rhodes, brilliant opinion. You need to read this one. The trustee wanted three things in this case from the debtor. One, the trustee wanted a tax refund in the amount of $26,862 that the debtor received post-petition. And so Judge starts the discussion by analyzing first what community property is property of the bankruptcy estate and what community property is not property of the bankruptcy estate. And it always confuses the issue to me when you've got the debtor and a non-filing spouse, because the non-filing spouse is the one who paid and withheld the $26,862. But the tax was generated by virtue of the fact that the NOLs were generated by the debtor who filed the case, and without that, the taxes wouldn't have been generated. What Judge did, she took a good sampling of cases and determined that since the $26,862 was from the earnings of the non-filing spouse, they were under her sole control, and therefore they were not property of the bankruptcy estate, so the debtor wins. But she said that since the NOLs were part of the debtor who filed, and they got to go back and amend their tax return if the trustee wants them to, because those tax attributes really ought to go to the trustee if the trustee wants them. And so what happened, I don't know whether they had to do that. So, yeah, so that kind of, you know, win a little, lose a little. Probably should have called. Maybe Judge Rhodes could tell us. Recent case. Now, the second thing that the trustee wanted was a house that the debtor had legal title to. The debtor and his spouse never lived in the house. They paid the down payment for his parents. The parents apparently had moved in with them and were taking care of their kids, and therefore they quit their jobs, and they were living basically off money that the debtor gave them. And the debtors made the monthly mortgage payments. So you had the debtor making the down payments, the debtors made the mortgage payments. It was everybody's understanding that it was going to be the parents' house and that they retained the beneficial interest to it. Judge decided that in this case, a resulting trust resulted and the parents retained title to the property and the trustee didn't get the house. But you had a lot more fun with the issue of fraudulent transfers connected with the purchase of a Honda that the debtor purchased for his parents, purchased and paid for the Honda. And she takes a look at the two-year look-back period under the bankruptcy code, but also the four-year look-back period that we see in the Texas Uniform Fraudulent Transfer Act. And one of the elements of a fraudulent transfer is the transfer made at a time that the debtor was insolvent. And at the time that the Honda was bought, the debtor was in business, payments were made, he was not insolvent. But then when his business went bust, he became insolvent. And after that time, he continued to make payments of $9,995 to his parents. When his business went bust, he was not making any money. He became a preacher. And maybe his sermons weren't that good, but he was not making anything. But the result is, Judge said, parents, you owe $9,955 to the trustee and for those payments that you received after your son was insolvent. Great opinion, well written. You need to read it. And for the record, I have no cases pending in Judge Rhodes' court.
Thank you very much, Bernie. Bill Rochelle. Absolutely needs no introduction, Bill.
Well, we have two cases, bankruptcy cases, before the Supreme Court. They will be argued back-to-back on December 5 and December 6. The good news is this. No matter how they rule, neither case is going to end bankruptcy as we know it. In other words, it's not Stern versus Marshall or anything like that. They are very interesting cases, though. The first is a 4-4 circuit split. The case is going to be known, I think, as Bartenwerfer, and it deals with whether an
innocent... Not by me.
it deals with whether an innocent debtor can nonetheless be saddled with a non-dischargeable debt, because as we know, going back to the 1880s, the Supreme Court said, I think, in dicta, that if one partner commits fraud, Another partner is, of course, liable for the fraud, but it's non-dischargeable as to the innocent partner. The circuits are evenly split. Four of them say that there must be scienter. The debtor who is facing dischargeability complaint must have been guilty of some bad act. Four other circuits say no, doesn't matter. This is a wonderful case because it pits the statute on one hand, because the statute to me seems to lead to the conclusion that you don't have to be yourself guilty to have a non-dischargeable debt. But on the other side, there's policy. And innocent people in this country, in criminal law and otherwise, are supposed to be off the hook. I can't wait to see how they decide this case. I would only hope that they see some faint glimmer of equity power in the bankruptcy court. But believe me, I'm not holding my breath. The other case is one that I think will be known as MOAC, Mall of America Holding Corporation. This has to do with whether or not Section 363M is jurisdictional. That's the section, as you know, which says that on appeal, the reversal or modification of an approval of a lease or a sale does not affect the lease or the sale. We have a split of circuits. Two circuits have held that that statute is jurisdictional. Big deal. Because if it's jurisdictional, the appellate court cannot touch it with a 10-foot pole. If there's something clearly wrong that won't upset the sale, you still can't touch it. There are five circuits which have said, look, the statute does not have jurisdictional language, so it's not jurisdictional. It is simply a limitation on remedy.